have come down from the mountain, bearing mostly antennas this time, actually. Long story there.
No tablets?
Well, some tablets, yeah. Definitely some tablets, but not the kind of tablets you're thinking. I mean, lots of tablets.
You didn't bring tablets down that you smash and then murder a lot of people and then say it's good?
Well, they're good tablets, but they're you could smash them, but they're not the kind of tablets. I mean, you could even read them, because I got little letters on them, but I don't know that brain drugs... Well, I suppose you could start a religion with brain drugs. I know some people who have.
I think, actually, Mormonism might have been done by brain drugs. That's one of the...
I think most,
theories I've heard.
Most of your American religions probably have brain drugs in their DNA somewhere.
I've got my nickel on all religions, starting with brain drugs.
Yeah, probably.
But I mean, Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard's experimentation is documented, and I couldn't speak to Mormonism, but yeah.
Whole lot of cocaine.
Yeah. So, it's the American dream literally is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. Joining me today is Josh. How are you?
Doing good.
And Justin, what's going on?
Not too bad, man.
Totally easy.
All right. Hot out today.
Yeah, no kidding. Totally easy if you remember. Everybody's name begins with J, except mine. But yeah, I am. I have come down off the mountain to record this week's episode because... Becky is currently at Space Camp Quest Northwest, which is this is the first day of it. The campers are arriving now. I will be at that camp, and it should be a good time. In fact, I'm going to be doing this episode and then finishing up some of the projects that I'm working on for camp, and then sort of the last minute stuff, and then packing the truck and heading on up. And it's the first year my nephew's able to go, which is pretty cool. But so Becky didn't record an episode last week, so I'm recording it this week, and then we'll take it from there, I guess, is how this is going to go. But that's why you get me this week. In other news, I guess, studio news, but not necessarily the kind of news that you guys generally pay attention to. Hey, they announced the Raspberry Pi 4.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, no kidding. So if you don't know what a Raspberry Pi is,
listen, it's not something you eat.
You could eat it.
Well,
it would probably hurt.
Definitely not recommend it.
No, yeah. I mean, metal, fiberglass, copper. Well,
yeah, you had my attention at Raspberry Pi, and then I guess I just have to stick around to find out what the rest of it is.
Yeah. It is a single board computer, quite popular with techies like myself. They generally sell for $35. They have Ethernet. The newer ones have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. They got four USB ports. They run an ARM board, or they have an ARM processor on it, which is the same kind of stuff as your phones. And you can do a lot of stuff with them. I mean, I've used them for... I have a... Right over here, I have this AM/FM tuner, and I put a microcontroller in there so you can control it.
We're all now looking at one side of the studio.
Yeah, you can put a USB attached to a Raspberry Pi, and then the Raspberry Pi streams the received radio signals, which was pretty handy when I was building the LPFMs here.
Like an SDR?
Sort of like an SDR, except it doesn't give you the baseband, it just gives you the audio.
All right.
And then I got an SDR, and I just started using that. But that was an early project. I'm doing all the development for the radio automation software I'm building on a Raspberry Pi. It's a little acrylic box that I filled with junk and carry with me.
Hmm.
But interestingly enough, the new Raspberry Pi fixes a lot of the problems that annoying people have said that that are problems with the Raspberry Pi. It adds USB 3, gigabit Ethernet.
The people that have these problems are annoying?
They are super annoying. Have you met Linux people?
I mean, the head of Linux is really annoying.
Well,
the guy that programs Linux.
He calmed down a little bit.
Did he?
They've accepted a code of conduct, which I was definitely in favor of. I really like... I gotta say, I was a fan of Linus Torvalds' rants. They're pretty legendary in my neck of the woods. But I honestly... and this brings us to another major milestone, which we should probably discuss. Congratulations, Josh, on your graduation.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you are.
I am now a master of stuff.
Yeah, like
cybersecurity and information stuff.
Oh, is that what it is? That sounds very, very James Bond.
It's
actually
very, very policy driven, boring stuff.
How come all the policy gigs get cool titles?
That's your cover story, isn't it, Josh?
Well,
it's boring policy.
I mean,
stuff.
I can't tell you that.
Oh
yeah,
well, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I don't know that he's going to let us in on that secret over the on the air. Yeah, I don't know that.
Way to preserve OPSEC under pressure.
That's sort of, by definition, bad signals intelligence. I honestly, part of the reason I became an activist and stopped paying attention to technological stuff is the attitudes in especially even the open source community are just poisonous.
But then again, is everything that gets kind of community is something that becomes poisonous, though?
Yeah, but I think tech is worse, because it's the kind of, it's super bro-y. And even the parts that aren't super bro-y are bro-y in a non-bro-y way. It's
like you bro out about how not bro you are.
Yeah,
like the you got the bro culture and then the counter bro culture, and then you have the counter bro culture.
And I try not to use bro as an insult very often, right. But it's so applicable in this case that I can't think of a better word. It's like in my younger days, I would quote Little Rascals and say it was a He-Man Women Haters Club.
The whole tech community, or the
open source community, I always found really kind of difficult with that, and it kind of infected me for a while when I was in my twenties. Mm-hmm. But then I got the vaccine, and
I did a dance with a little bit of men's rights activism.
Oh, you
a couple
did
years back.
Oh, geez, okay.
Yeah, I came right up to the line, and then I started realizing like how poisonous the rhetoric they were using was.
That's actually a really good question, and we're going way far afield now, but it's totally worth it. Is I think the measure of somebody isn't like just what policies they accept; it's what policies they have dalliances with and then reject. And I that's not something that we generally talk about on in the atheism community, because there is a little bit of a logical purity thing going on.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I believe we talked about this before. I really liked the book Atlas Shrugged when I first found out about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I went back to my menial labor job.
Exactly. Yeah. everybody who
hang on a second.
there was a small era when I was still working for a living that anyone who suggested Ayn Rand to me made less money than I did, which I found really like I don't know. I'm all over the place today. Yeah. But I just found that a very weird observation. And it's not like I would ask them what how much money they made. But it's like somebody is telling me that I should read Atlas Shrugged while they're serving me, fast food. And I'm like, okay. It's well, the market has spoken. And I think the market seems to like my ideas better.
Yeah. The thing that I liked the most about it was the kind of... The storytelling aspect of it was a fun story.
Yeah.
I read Fountainhead later, and that one went a little bit off the rails to me. Mm. But I wasn't aware of like the cultural phenomenon of Ayn Rand and objectivism before I read the book. So to me, it was just this really interesting futuristic novel about
I'll tell you something. When she's not on a political screed, she could actually write.
Right.
I will say Anthem was pretty good. I mean,
I haven't read that one yet.
It gets super, it gets Randian political crap at the end, but it's an interesting sci-fi story. It's just like any other sci-fi story for whom the author is trying to put over a political ideology, which I find logically incongruous.
Would Dianetics be an interesting book if it didn't lead to Scientology?
No, L. Ron Hubbard's a terrible writer. He's a low-rent Robert Heinlein.
Read Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, or don't.
I like Battlefield Earth.
No, the movie or the book?
I like the movie.
Okay, the movie is hilarious. The book is interminable.
It's so bad.
And the thing is, the movie only covers like the first third of the book. I don't know if you've seen the book, but you could kill
it's
very large mammals with it. Like that big 16-foot ostrich-looking thing they discovered in Europe, when, in Neanderthal times or something like that. Apparently An 12-foot ostrich that was like fighting humanity, which to me is the most terrifying thing.
I mean, it's a velociraptor, essentially. It's a giant velociraptor.
Yeah, it's a velociraptor with no teeth, so it's ticked off about not having any teeth and any ability to kill anything. So all ability to cut is replaced with hate.
It's going to gum you very aggressively.
Yeah.
Don't mess with ostriches.
Ostriches will cut you wide open.
There's
a purple
bird, like a purple colored bird, I think, that killed somebody in Australia. Just like straight up walked into his house and just killed him. This was just like a couple of months ago, too.
Emus messed up the Australian army. You just don't mess with those kind of birds, man.
Birds are evil. Birds are evil.
They're absolutely evil.
And like, so I'm up on the mountain. I'm in the cabin, and yeah. it's pretty rural there. It's very RF quiet, which is why I like going there. And there are chickens, and unlike Tacoma, there are actually roosters. And I'm gonna bleep this out, but yeah. I need to get the what's going on in my brain out to you guys. Everybody thinks like roosters crow in the morning and sometimes in the evening.
No,
roosters crow whenever they
shaz butt
want to. Like it could be 2:30 in the morning. What are you crowing at? What is happening? Like, everyone but me and you is asleep. Why are you talking?
Yeah, and they're psychotic, too. They'll try and chase you down. It's funny. You got this little foot-tall bird that wants to peck at you. You're like,
yeah. Birds are jerks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you ever see a pet, somebody that owns, like, a parrot or something like that? Like,
yeah.
You almost always see that parrot bite their owner.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, no, that's a love bite.
My friend had a cockatiel who would just swear at me loudly and like, every time I went near it, it was terrible. I don't know why people like birds. Well, I mean, okay, birds are pretty. I get it. But they are insane. They are. I mean, if anything, the Jurassic Park movies didn't have enough blood and gore. Because if birds are the evolutionary successors to dinosaurs, dinosaurs were the bloodiest. They'd kill you just for looking at you. They, it's not just that they're violent. They're violent and they're tenacious and they keep at it because their buffer is very hard to clear and it is very small. And apparently the kill thing command takes over the entire buffer.
So is this why you like cats so much? Because they're such a nemesis to the birds?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, except I'm actually...
To save you from the birds.
A little bit of a secret. I'm actually one of those people who's fairly serious about keeping cats inside.
Did you have a bad experience with a Hitchcock film when you were younger, by chance?
No, I love that movie. If anything, if you want an animal that I had a bad experience with, it's dogs. That's why I hate dogs. I may have said this on the air before, but my mother loved dogs, whatever, and,
No, I've never heard this story before.
We were a foster home for dogs from the shelter.
Got it.
And foster home is a nice euphemism. And what it's a euphemism for is we are basically doggy death row. Is that if a dog was just unadoptable, we would get it for a few weeks. And if we didn't take the dog went upstate to a farm where it lived comfortably for the rest of its very short life.
How nice.
And so we had some very nice dogs. Like, we had one dog that was just lovely. It was an English terrier named Stella. She was wouldn't hurt a fly, loved everyone and loved everything, and had horrible IBS.
Worst case of
IBS. I'm gonna block it again because I just gotta get the story across. She was great. I'm 5 years old, and I'd walk in the door to the apartment that we lived in, and Stella was just so happy to see me that she would
shazbot
like a jet of
shazbot.
Oh,
would just eject out the back of her.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was terrible. And then we had that's one
and
dog.
That's the good dog.
Yeah, that's the good dog. The bad dog was angry Andy the German Shepherd, who was fine.
Some dogs show their love in weird ways.
Unless the adults weren't home, and then it tried to bite me in half. And when I was a 5-year-old boy, that is a thing a German Shepherd could have done.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So
just waited until you were by yourself.
Yeah, the dog was lovely when adults were around, but as soon as the adults left, it decided that it needed to fight me for household dominance.
Right.
And it didn't need to do that. All it had to do was like look at me and say, hey, I'm the dominant one in this household. And 5-year-old me would have been, oh yes, obviously. Yeah, you can have my food. That's fine. I just don't bite me.
Right. He's got the teeth. You've got just like small underdeveloped thumbs. Yeah.
All right. So we're really forked up in this conversation. So we need to back out a couple. So right. You had dalliances with the MRA thing.
Right, right.
I got caught up in the broiness of open source tech when I was in my early 20s.
Oh yeah, that's how we got here, Raspberry
Pi. And in both of our cases, and then a couple in both of our cases, we're like, whoa, this is bad. No, not doing this, and backed off. And I
it's a thing of like opening your eyes and sound of taking in your surroundings every now and then.
Yeah,
making sure you are where you want to be.
The context shifts, and you're worried about if you're actually worried about helping other people. And it's like I was never like women are bad at technology. I was just like really into the open source community, and I was a big advocate for it. And in a lot of ways, I still am.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just led me down some weird paths. And then once I took stock of my situation, I'm like, I don't like where this is going. Mm-hmm. I don't like it at all. And that was a few years before we started Ask an Atheist. And so, you know, that's part of what made me move up here to Washington and sort of back away from technology,
mm-hmm.
or at least, you know, the business end of technology. It's like, yeah.
Where did you live at this time?
Arizona.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is a bad place to be for that sort of stuff. Yeah. And I became what I beheld, and I decided I didn't like it and made a change. And, I thought that was cool. And, you know, I thought that was, believe it or not, I would hold that up as one of the better moments of my lifetime, is the fact that I was able to back out of that. Because a lot of people, when they're so heavily invested in something like that, it's so hard to break away.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I mean, even in my case, I wanted to get away from tech and be more of an activist and more social or whatever, and see how well that's worked out for me. I mean, I'm just not in the social aspects of technology. I'm still building stuff every day.
Oh, yeah.
People
can't see the studio, but there is stuff all over the place.
Yeah. My house looks like how do I describe it? A partially digested and regurgitated Radio Shack is how my house
looks.
That's
a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like more like a 1980s style Radio Shack.
Totally.
Not the new ones where it was all just phones and stuff.
Yeah. No, like when there were actually parts there.
The kind that Captain Marvel smashed into.
To that end. Okay. is that a movie reference?
Yes, it's a movie
reference. To that end, I think the Raspberry Pi 4, one of the biggest things for me in it is that you can buy it with more RAM.
Yeah, so it's like 1, 2, and 4, and I saw that they actually have a 8 gigabyte version that they're planning on putting out later.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so that one's going to be...
So here's the thing. I think a Raspberry Pi 4 could power this studio.
Well, that's what they're saying. They're saying that it's basically a full functional computer at this point, that you could actually throw the dreaded Windows 10 on it and it actually work on it as a functional PC.
Well, yeah, it's a quad-core A76 ARM processor.
Yeah, which the now Windows 10 supports.
Right. And this computer right here is a Celeron J1900. So the computer that we're recording into right now, the reason I went with it is that it's entirely passively cooled.
Yep, so nice and quiet.
Yeah, it's for, like, this computer makes no noise. It has no fans in it.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason we use it. It's got 4 cores and a TDP, a thermal design envelope of 10 watts. I think the Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 4 processor is about as powerful as the processor in here. Maybe even the Pi 3 processor was about as powerful. The thing that was holding me back about using a Raspberry Pi in the studio was RAM. 1 gig is not enough.
Yeah.
And actually disk throughput, because I'm, because to record 8 tracks in FLAC, that's a lot of disk IO. And so with USB 3 and with gigabit Ethernet and, 4 gig of RAM, I think I'm going to be replacing this box with a Raspberry Pi.
That's amazing, because the box that he's pointing at is a desktop computer.
It's a desktop computer.
Small form factor computer. But we're talking about a computer that is the size of a deck of cards.
Oh, also, dual HDMI ports on it.
Yeah, micro HDMI. So you have to buy the adapter. Well, it comes with the adapters, but...
Okay, yeah. So that, like, when I was up on the mountain and I read that the Raspberry Pi, Pi 4 came out, Raspberry Pi 4... I'm reading like, oh man, I know what I'm building in the new studios. I know what I'm using to drive the new studios. Like, I'll use them everywhere. I'll use them at the radio stations. I'll use them where this studio is moving to. And
I have a stupid question that's going to portray just how little I know about this.
Okay.
So when you talk about the Raspberry Pi 4, if you buy that for $35, you plug that into the monitor, and then you have like the keyboard and the mouse and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and it's just the computer part of the computer.
Yeah,
is the size of deck of cards.
Yeah, one of the things about the Raspberry Pi is that it's just a circuit board. So okay. if you want storage and a monitor and a keyboard and a power supply for it, uh-huh. It uses a USB power supply.
Okay,
so like the stuff you charge your phones with. So I mean, it's $35 or $55 for the 4 gig version for just the board. So you got to add about, you know, $20 or $30 of more gear to it to make it a functional computer.
Hmm.
But still, that's a nicely
it's a decent enough computer.
Especially the new one. It's a decent computer for the price. And a lot of people in the open source community are like, "Oh, this board is better. That board is better. No. It's a scam. It's terrible." But it's like
Raspberry Pi gets a lot of support, so that's why that one's better.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of community support, which is what matters.
I have a BeagleBone Black. I have a PC Duino. I have an Odroid C1. Like I like the single board computers. When a new one comes out and it's relatively inexpensive, I order it. But the processor, the only one I haven't tried yet that I want to try out is the Pine 64, because they have a $200 little laptop thing for it.
I heard it was garbage.
And they're going to do a phone based off the same board.
Okay.
And a phone running Linux is something that I've long wanted. So, and I mean actual Linux, not Android. The software support for all that is junk. Usually it's just not that good. And
yeah, Raspberry Pi, you just look up Raspberry Pi and what function you want to do, and there's
probably somebody's already done it.
Yeah, it's already been done, most likely.
So if you work in technology, I'd actually like your take on it, on the culture of it. But anyway,
what are we here for?
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
on your graduation.
Bringing it back around.
I'm not saying you haven't been working in tech, because you've been working this whole time, but it just reminded me. It's one of the things I've been thinking about while I've been up on the mountain.
Yeah, now I'm just papered.
Yeah.
I'm actually now a purebred mutt.
You are three steps ahead of me, actually, as far as degrees go.
You're bona fide.
Yeah. All right, I have an email. This is Lewis from Chehalis, who writes, "Hi, Sam, Becky, and crew. I know Sam's been having a rough time. The last I heard, he was going back up the mountain. I hope he's doing well. As Sam's partner, Becky, I'm sure this is hard on her. I hope she's doing well also. While I enjoy listening to you every week, I'm sure there's a lot involved in the production of these shows. It's more important you take care of yourself and get healthy. Sincerely, Lewis." Thank you very much, Lewis. That was actually, I did want to thank you, because that message came at a fairly critical time for me, and really really kind of put wind in my sails. I'm still not doing that great. In fact, if anything, with all the like projects I'm trying to do for camp, I've been infected with a kind of a monomania. Like I was up till 5:30 last night, or this morning, just working. No, sorry, 7:30 this morning. We're just working on laser cuttering bits and building a hat. And you'll see the hat. The hat's pretty horrible looking, but I was kind of going for horrible looking, so it works out. So yeah, I mean, I'm kind of working through things, and it's a good break. And I managed to work. I built a really nice antenna for camp, so now we can have ham radio at camp.
Yeah, that antenna is pretty sweet. It's deadly.
Super deadly. Yeah. I'm actually probably going to do a Patreon post about it. Also, thank you to the Patreon people, because you guys have done me a real solid. I'll get into that later. So that's, I guess, what's been going on in my brain. I grant that it's not very atheisty related, but it is what I'm up to, and that's what I can talk about. But we do have a lot of news. But we'll do that after the break. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to the break. When we come back, those of you who join forces are the same ones that keep crosses. I don't know. I'm going for a Rage Against the Machine reference, and it's not working.
Seth Olapod is lying to you. Her mind-reading glass thingies are stupid. They don't do anything. Seth Olapod is a creepy stalker / eavesdropper and is creepy, and she just randomly popped up in camp when we were talking about UA Gold. Be on the watch for that creep who's stupid. Don't buy her crap and waste your gold. Did I mention she was stupid? Don't trust her. Don't buy her crap. Don't even talk to her. She will find you, stalk you while you are asleep, and kill you.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
Ah, no.
Have you heard about these new Squid Ink products? You may have heard about how good they are, and how they are miracle cures and can make you more attractive. I'm here to tell you the truth about one of their products. Their Squid Ink drink claims to fix things like headaches, pains, and broken limbs. I managed to get a hold of their drink and try it. I was told that it would make my back pain go away by the next day. A day later, my back still hurts. All this drink contains is just some vinegar and dye. That is the real truth about their product.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
Ah, no.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. This is Ask an Atheist. This is not I Hate the Open Source Community with Sam Olvey.
And other things.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist about things that are not atheism, I think.
Stream of consciousness with Sam Olvey.
Pretty much, yeah. Let's get into some news. An online church is suing officials in Tennessee after lawmakers passed a bill barring clergy who received online ordination from officiating wedding ceremonies. Universal Life Church Ministries filed suit, arguing that the law unconstitutionally burdens the free religious exercise of its members and clergy. While another online church known as the American Marriage Ministries began offering mobile in-person ordination via a tour bus, that's nice, Universal Life defended its open online ordination model by citing a commitment to the power of technology to bring people together in a global spiritual community. The church also declared that it wholeheartedly rejects this outdated notion of religion and anchored its members in the affirmation that we are all children of the same capital universe. So they got a little Dr. Bronner soap label at the end, but I agree with this sentiment. where are you guys on this one?
This is a really strange one. I don't understand why the lawmakers in Tennessee would even write this law in the first place. Why would they waste their time on it?
Have you been to Tennessee?
Well, putting that part aside, why they would put this law hinging on the fact that they're getting this process done over the internet rather than the tour bus? Like, why are they making that distinction? It just seems completely silly. Of a thing to pay attention to.
Well, the thing that the reason why they're doing it is probably because, like, the institutions such as the Church of Bacon and all that, they really want to make sure, like, they want to push a certain kind of religion, and they don't want a religion or something in the place of religion to be allowed by the state.
Right.
I mean, this part of the United States has long used what's a real church and what's not a real church as a method of social control. Part of it.
They feel super empowered right now because of the makeup of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but I know for a fact, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that you haven't been able to officiate, ULC hasn't been able to officiate ceremonies in Tennessee for a while now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I know this because not only am I a Hair Club for Men member, I'm also a president. I actually, the month that ULC started offering ordination online, my certificate says, like, something 11th, 1996 on it. And I have performed 4 ceremonies now. And unfortunately, now you've got the American Humanist Association with an officiant program. But for a while, it was the only way some of us could get non-religious, non-courthouse marriages done.
Right.
Was the ULC, which is precisely what they don't want. They want, you know, people in Tennessee want you to get married in a church before God.
Well, maybe this is one of those things where they're doing this to try and hurt someone else, not realizing that it's going to have a negative effect on someone, on other churches, the churches that they're actually in favor of.
Yeah.
Because y'all remember that survey, that data collection that was done about, like, the most post-Christian, that whole topic?
Yes, yeah. Right.
So they're using technology and data and polling and all that kind of stuff to find out this information so it can be used. I believe Becky is the one who made the point about for marketing.
Yeah.
So you can have other churches doing their stuff online, except now they can't,
mm-hmm,
because of this targeted law from Tennessee. So why wouldn't other churches, more established, quote unquote, established churches like the Catholic Church and other Christian denominations, not be also fighting against this?
Well, because yeah. they see Very those short-sighted. As competitors, I'd say.
Right.
Like, so if these religion, if these religions that are able to exist solely online are able to exist, they kind of, they're direct competitors of the brick and mortar. I mean, it's basically just capitalism.
Brick and mortar religion. I love yeah, it. Oh,
every, yeah. But I mean, there's nothing stopping those like brick and mortar churches from getting online themselves.
Yeah.
And they're just shooting themselves in the foot. Maybe is this just a short-sighted hypocrisy thing?
Crucizon.
Well, a brick and mortar brick and mortar church exists solely. It doesn't exist solely in the real world. It can have an online presence, and that actually will give it in according to this law legitimacy.
Yeah.
If it ornates you.
Yeah.
Even if you are only online, the existence of the church as a brick and mortar existence probably counters that.
I have noticed a correlation between the likelihood of a church having a house rock band and the quality of their website. Where if they've got an
inverse?
No, actually.
No, it's a strong correlation.
It's a strong correlation. Because if they have like if they're one of those waspy hip churches, you know what I mean? They're gonna have a rock band in their
yeah, and they're gonna have a web developer that they actually have dedicated for it, and they're gonna actually try and appeal to the younger audience.
We're the awesome churches where they speak in tongues and handle
snakes,
animals, and do a lot of screaming and have frankly better music. They're gonna have like a GeoCities page,
yeah,
or something like that. There was one radio show host at a former radio station. It was a radio station we used to be on, and it is now not that radio station, sadly closed. KLAY. I don't know if I mentioned this on the air, but KLAY got bought by a Catholic organization at the first of the year. They're doing like abortion is terrible news in the mornings now.
I'm sure that has a big market here.
Yeah, it's hideous.
Oh boy.
So yeah, the radio station that put Ask an Atheist on the map is now Catholic. Just putting that out there. Which is why I'm so focused on community radio here in Tacoma.
All right.
There used to be a radio show After Hours.
I remember this.
Yeah,
it was so great.
Yeah.
It was
and we found her website, and okay, my desktop computer, Mothership, is named Mothership for a reason. It's got 32 gig of RAM, it's got 8 cores, it's got running at 4 gigahertz, it's got a lot of disk space, it's got everything you need. I do most of my development on that box. So I made it pretty big. And her website actually caused an out of memory thing in Firefox when I went on it. She had so many MIDI.
Is she still around?
She's around somewhere. Yeah. Huh. I hear from her every now and again.
Well, didn't she
just
like
another radio host with a really
She spent
bad.
Her time like countering your guys' show.
Yeah. She. Yeah. Oh right, you weren't
this
around
is,
here
no,
for
this
that.
Is long
this is well
time.
Before your time.
I was still.
We
sequestered in Florida.
We were at KLAY, and I did a talk on this when we went on tour. Somebody leased the time right after us to tell people the truth.
The capital T?
The cap with a capital T. And because the Lord called upon her. She was originally going to have a morning slot, but the Lord impressed upon her to take this slot instead. And it turned into a big fight, and we nearly got kicked off the radio station.
That's a whole lot of words for her to say, I don't have any material of my own.
And if you heard the show, I have recordings of it. I should get them to you.
Please do.
She clearly had no material.
Just listen to your show on this, try and fight you.
Yeah, it was fun. All right. This is a story I've been following, but I don't think I've talked about very much. A Roman cross-shaped monument will remain on public land after the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 to overturn a lower court's ruling. Known as the Peace Cross, the structure honors soldiers who died in World War I and was erected in 1925 on land now maintained by the state of Maryland. While local residents suing for its removal argued that the cross violated the principle of separation of church and state, Justice Samuel Alito opined that removing the monument after nearly a century would be seen by many as not a neutral act, but as the manifestation of a hostility towards religion. Dissenting Justice Ginsburg stated that the Latin cross is the foremost symbol of the Christian faith, was never perceived as an appropriate headstone for memorial for Jewish soldiers and others who did not adhere to Christianity, and that by maintaining the peace cross on a public highway, the commission elevates Christianity over other faiths and religion over non-religion. She was joined in her opinion by Justice Sotomayor. When Becky hears this, Becky, that sentence, this brief is one sentence. One, this brief is one sentence. And two, more to the point, I read it and it worked. That's amazing. Gold stars for everybody. Yeah, this Peace Cross thing.
Was this like the Ulysses of show notes entries?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Either that or Infinite Jest.
Right. On the facts of this case, I believe the original Bladensburg Cross was on private land.
Yeah.
And then it was switched over to, like, the ownership of the land transferred to the state of Maryland. And that it was only after that switch of ownership that the symbol became, like, quote-unquote, a problem that needed a constitutional decision on. So I'm kind of sympathetic to just the kind of leave it alone argument, but
it's clear
still,
no, absolutely not.
It's clear that we need a social demarcation of when something becomes historical.
Yeah.
Because the argument here is that the cross has been up
it's now
a historical thing, and it would be seen as an attack on religion to remove it. And I think there's, while I think it's inappropriate to place it here, I think there is a kind of logic to that argument. Like, let's just pretend for a second that the Hagia Sophia was on American land. Do we knock that down because it's a symbol of religion? I mean, like, what? There's a lot of religious artifacts on public land in the United States that are centuries old, several centuries old.
Yeah.
And it seems like it would be bad for historical purposes to knock those down just to make sure that we don't, that we're not keeping, we're not, you know, giving stuff to religion. On the other hand, a lot of those Civil War statues are also fairly old, but the other side of that is those symbols are used to actively oppress people in the near term, which I think, you know, people over history, you know, like dead churches, old, you know, religious thingies that are now national monuments, that's fine. But in the case of like a statue of General Lee or something like that in front of a historically black college, no, that the modern people are more important than historical statues. That's clear. So I don't want to make that conflation. But
I meant simply sympathetic to the idea of like just the lazy argument. Like the court doesn't want to put down this order that says no, this thing has to be moved or this land has to be sold. Like I can understand that. Just just leave it alone.
Despite,
I get it at like an emotional level, but the way that they made this decision is really bad.
It's about setting precedent. So I mean, like this is them. This is Christians putting a marker on the ground and then saying like you can no longer go beyond this line. They're claiming territory, and the next step is going to be furthermore. All right, so this Roman-shaped cross, it's going to require funds to repair it and maintain it.
Right.
That's taxpayer-funded, so that's a violation of...
Yeah, and like this goes to what I meant with like the way that it was decided, because like Clarence Thomas's opinion on this, like, he's also a guy who thinks that the Establishment Clause doesn't only applies to federal governments, not states, which is completely flies in the face of the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. But you know, hey,
the cheap programmer hack. So to go back to what I was saying before, the cheap programmer hack that I need in order to have this make sense to me is, how old is history? What is the demarcation line?
It's arbitrary. It's whatever
we need to because of this ruling. We need an establishment now, because if there's no hard line, is 10 years ago historical? Is 5 years ago historical? Is 3 months ago historical? Without a hard line, without a definition, without something that we understand, this could be applied universally.
Okay.
Like if it's important, like if somebody puts up a whole bunch of crosses because of a school shooting on public land and expects the public to maintain these monuments, it's historical because the school shooting was super important.
But then they're assuming all the kids that were killed were Christian.
Of course. I mean, the idea that this cross is not a religious monument is ridiculous on its face. It's a cross!
Yeah, it completely goes against 50 years of precedence that's been established through the Lemon Test.
If it were me, I would say World War I monuments aren't historical enough to merit exemptions here. I mean, yes, I know.
As far as taxpayer responsibility to maintain them.
Right. And I would say that's, I'm definitely in favor and of the mind of the people who brought this suit. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But look at, as you just said, and I want to bring it back to that now, look at the makeup of the Supreme Court right now. And that's the important thing here, is the Supreme Court, the Republicans in have engineered things where they basically got to completely reformulate the Supreme Court over a period of about 15 years.
Yeah.
With Roberts and that guy who
likes beer?
No, Kavanaugh. Yeah, that guy.
Gorsuch.
Gorsuch Kavanaugh is the guy who I can never remember.
Okay, right.
Because I think he's got like some sort of thing in his gene code that just makes me instantly forget him when he's not in front of me.
He's pretty transparent.
Yeah,
like, just see through him, white.
Hey.
Hey.
One of the kind of like side effects of this kind of thing, why, to your point, Josh, why we have to pay attention to this sort of thing. So it's sort of, again, the way that it was decided, not the fact that it was decided this way, but the way that it was decided. I see a lot of openings here. If they're talking about disregarding the original intent of the thing, of the monument, then what they're basically doing is redefining what secularism is. And a little bit of a side note here. Are y'all familiar with the first political cartoon in America?
No.
It's Join or Die.
Oh, that one.
By Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
And so that was put out in 1754, right? But like the original intent of that, like that was the first British colonialist talking about like a unification of these separate colonies. There's Virginia, Rhode Island, all these places were all separate colonies, and coming together to fend off the British government. How about the Gadsden flag? You guys are familiar with that one, right?
Oh yeah. I see that
more familiar than I would like to be. I'll put it that way. Yeah.
So that was first designed in 1775 during the American Revolutionary War in a cultural context where the Join or Die political cartoon, which again was the first political cartoon published in America, had a similar intent. You can kind of follow where the idea kind of comes from. There's the join or die, separated snakes together, don't tread on me, we're fighting, this kind of thing. A lot of people, like the kind of thing that you're speaking to right now, the familiarity, the uncomfortable familiarity with the Gadsden flag, is because that symbol has kind of been appropriated.
Oh yeah,
so
totally.
I have this shirt that has the snake in the shape of a uterus that says don't tread on me. Now that's like the original intent is about like an overreaching governmental type of body going in, messing things up, and like, you know what, we're gonna band together and we're gonna make this we're gonna fight this thing off. So if they're redefining what the cross originally stood for, because like you said, this is a symbol of Christianity,
mm-hmm.
like you can't get beyond that. So if they move that to a different location, it would be as if they like the movement of the symbol became what the original intent of the symbol was.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
People will have short memories, so they'll think that that's always been the case.
So think in terms of, like, Liberty State, this Matt Shea guy that we're talking about a lot, right? No, it is not beyond the realm of imagination, since they already want to set up the state, that people like Matt Shea would be able to find some historical site with these kinds of buildings that are used for these sorts of purposes, and then appropriate them and make those buildings the official government buildings,
yeah.
Right.
And then establish around them.
Right.
The state of liberty.
Kind of like free speech zones. Basically, this is like, The Handmaid's Tale never establishes how it became it is, mm-hmm. but this is basically on the road to Gilead.
Yeah.
I suppose.
And like, the way that this was decided, I'm not trying to give many ideas, but I can see them trying to do something like this and having it be explicitly constitutional.
I think there might be...
But
so,
getting away with the symbolism because it's historical.
Right. But you were also talking about using this as sort of a spearhead for allowing states to be religious or to make religious statements. And I was thinking about that a little bit. And that might not be entirely too bad. Okay, you get what you want. Go off to Wyoming and build your Christian ethno state. That's great.
You mean like Utah?
I've got a weird, like, way of structuring society that would let like all of the different people who have these completely discordant belief systems, like, okay, you know what, go set up your little thing over there and make that your own.
Well, yeah, view. Don't displace people.
Yeah, don't just
go to where the people aren't and go do your thing over there.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of these people who subscribe to Seven Mountains theology, or, you know, want
dominion.
Yeah, who have dominionist ideals, or at least back people with dominionist ideals, when they finally get what they want, they're going to discover more. I think a lot of them are going to just realize that that's not really what they wanted in the first place. The leaders, the guys in charge, the guys who are pushing this real hard, that's exactly what they want, because they want power. This is about power. It's about social control. It's about getting a raging attention for controlling other people's bodies and minds. So that's what this is. Let's not lie. But the people who follow them, they're followed by the charisma, or they're attracted by the charisma. They're attracted by the yelling,
the rhetoric, the symbolism.
Yeah, but authoritarianism always starts that way, and then eventually, what happens is, you get rid of the people that are for you charismatically, and then eventually you just replace them with drones.
I'm actually thinking about specific authoritarian regimes in history, like, you know, everybody goes to Nazi Germany or Italy or the United States in 2016 because there's a lot of similarities where a lot of people wanted a very specific thing. A lot of people thought, well, Hitler's going to fix a lot of stuff, it'll be fine. Then he gets in power and they're there were literally a lot of people in Germany who were like, oh, this isn't what I wanted at all.
And by then it was too late.
But if you can constrain the laboratory to small dimensions that aren't displacing people, the experiment can go forward. People can go, oh, this is terrible, and leave.
Yeah.
Which is something in a takeover, like in Germany, like in Italy, like in Russia, like
North Korea,
you can't leave. And that's what keeps these systems running and what makes them so bloody. Or you can't leave, and then you go to places where the people already are, and you kill them or force them away and make refugees.
And there's a good real-life example of this kind of thing. For how long was it? Kansas under Brownback?
Yeah.
I think it was Governor Brownback or something like that. They had all of these taxation policies that were like, no taxation policy, really low property taxes, all this kind of stuff, and they're setting up this whole Tea Party referendum thing, and then their, you know, local economy
tanked.
Yeah, totally tanked.
And then it's like, okay, you got what you wanted. This is what happens when you get what you want.
Yeah. And the Republicans revolted against Brownback.
You see, if there was a way, and some of the ways, this is one of the things that one of my favorite founding fathers, the creepy weirdo Benjamin Franklin, was talking about, is being able to use the United States as a laboratory to figure out how to do these things. And, well, the world got significantly more complex since the 1770s, and the way they wanted to do it isn't really the way we can do it now. I don't know where I'm going with this. This is just totally off the cuff, and my brain isn't right. So we should say,
I don't think anybody in this room supports in any way any kind of like ethno states or religion states or anything like that, because we know what they're going to do with it.
Right. I'm offering it in a specific way that is designed for these projects to fail.
Well, they will fail.
Because they will fail. Yeah.
As long as there's a way to keep the contagion, but the problem is how do you do that without actually violating?
What we're talking about is that idea, though.
Right. Like, some people want to do this. They're willing to take arms in order to make it happen. What is the way we can get these people through the cycle of authoritarianism and blood and violence, and get it out of their systems and minimize the body count? Like, that's my ask here.
I don't know
if I can borrow a phrase from Rajan.
I don't know. People live everywhere.
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking. This is, believe it or not, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot up the mountain is how do you get it out of people's systems without killing people?
Yeah, I've also been thinking about, like, how do you change people's minds? And real life first person experience is a good way to do that. But you have to find some way to make sure people don't die because we know they will.
I hate to say it, but I've completely given up on changing people's minds. Like, that's not why I do this show. That's not why I don't know. I don't have I just don't feel like I do that. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm entertaining. I feel like I'm informing. I feel like Ask an Atheist when we're on the air. gives people, lets people know that our perspective exists,
right,
and that we're not, you know, we're not the traditional baby eaters of atheism, right, or we're not all Soviet communists, and that we're Americans who want.
Yeah, it's about raising positive awareness,
right,
of the atheist movement.
Dyed in the wool patriots.
Yeah. I want a Gadsden flag where it's divided into Giddy Prime, Caladan, and instead of a snake, it's a sandworm, and it says, no step on Shai Hulud.
I think this could happen.
Yeah, I just don't have the art for it.
How old is Dune? Is it public record yet?
No, but oh, so. I don't think the Frank Herbert estate would have a problem with it if okay. I did it. That, I think they'd kind of like it.
You just
it.
Couldn't profit off of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to. I'd give it away. I want everybody to fly this flag and tick off all the Gadsden flag flyers. One thing I do want to do, though, is I deleted the second break. We're just going to go straight through.
All right. We're doing it live.
I know a lot of people who bring these lawsuits to get these things taken down, like get In God We Trust off the money, to get some of these statues taken down. Mm-hmm. I don't know them personally. I'm not friends with them, but the atheism community isn't that big. You run into a lot of these people when you're a professional atheist.
Especially if you're doing things like this. You make the news, you make a name for yourself.
Why do you do this?
I think it comes from the same kind of thing that I was sort of referencing earlier when I was talking about the changing of people's minds. Did y'all hear about the woman who got charged with manslaughter for the death of her?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so there was a woman who was reacting, who's a mutual friend of someone I know online, and she was reacting completely disgustedly negative reaction to this story. Mm. Could not believe it. She's pro-life.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm like, congratulations.
Yeah.
This is what this looks like.
Yeah, this is what that leads to.
This is what you want.
Oh, no, this has nothing to do with abortion. I'm like, oh, no, it explicitly does. And I broke it all down.
This is what you had in mind.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's not what she had in mind. So at the end of that conversation there, we got a little bit testy, but I tried to keep it polite. At the end of it, I was like, all I can do is keep warning you that this is what's going to happen to you. So I think that's at least some of the motivation behind bringing these kinds of lawsuits is sort of the shot across the bow of the warning to people in some
way. If you leave something unchallenged, it becomes accepted.
But the thing is, we
can't allow that.
But I want a conversation about this from a legal standpoint is we keep losing.
Yeah.
This case law that was established by the Supreme Court ruling
is now precedent
and hurts our future attempts at this. I'm not saying don't do it. Mm-hmm. I am not advocating for or against it. That's not my point. My point is these people who are bringing these lawsuits, they're lawyers, they're smarter than I am. They're hands down. These are some of the most intelligent people I've met. Mm-hmm. I've had conversations.
But they're losing
with.
The, it's really dumb.
But
people.
they're losing it to yeah. I'm not criticizing. That's not what this is about. I just don't understand, and I'm in need of. I want to understand. Take me up the mountain and show me your tactical positioning here. I need to know. Why we're doing it this way. I need to know why we're establishing this case law. I can't believe we're just tilting at windmills here. The part of me wants to believe because these folks are so smart. There's got to be something I'm not seeing, a component of this that just doesn't make sense to me. I am not omniscient by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I spent a good part of my day talking about how omniscience is essentially impossible. And so I just want to know, if you're listening to this and you're somebody who's brought these lawsuits before, I'd like to have a chat on the air, off the air, wherever you like. And not whether or not these fights are good fights. They are good fights. That is not the question. I am with you. I donate to your causes. I talk about them on the air. I just need to know what the strategy is or if there's a strategy. That's my my statement to the people who were doing this Peace Cross thing, because I've been following the story and I've been hoping it's going to work out. I've been hoping it's going to work out, but I've also been watching the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, they did just overturn an abortion bill the other day, didn't they? Did I read about that?
There was a stop put to, I believe it was, oh geez, I'm not particularly familiar with this specific case, but I think it was an administrative law thing.
Yeah.
So not a thing that was on the merits.
Missouri is the one that banned all abortion clinics, period.
They stopped that particular thing from going forward, but it's not done with. Yeah. It's more paused than finished. So,
hang on a sec.
So one thing that
go ahead.
Came up, so the thing is, this case isn't new. This case has been going on for 5 years. And
a
so
long
what
time, yeah.
Did 5 years look like? Did it look like we were going to traject into the dystopian future that we're heading to now?
That's a good point.
So I think, honestly, I mean, it's just an accident of history that it became this decision.
But, like, with, like, the God on the money thing, those cases have been going on for years and years and years, and they keep losing.
But if you stop, then you're accepted, then it becomes unchallengeable, just unchallengeable.
No, you can challenge that. I like, the whole point of these cases, I mean, we just lose again if we stopped. The abortion by dismemberment thing, where somebody said to say it was some special court sort of murder, the Supreme Court overturned it. The Supreme Court announced on Friday that it will not hear a case regarding an Alabama law banning abortions by dismemberment, allowing a lower court ruling against the legislation to stand. That's this Supreme Court.
Right.
That's good. I mean, that's a good sign. This is one of the weird places where conservatism, in the dictionary definition, the conservatism of the Supreme Court, it tries to make as little case law as possible. Mm. It tries to not make waves. And the standing law against us with Roe v. Wade and whatnot is in our favor. But they don't want to, you know, they don't want to overturn case law.
Yeah.
This is where that kind of conservatism plays into our hands. It plays well for us.
I don't count on that.
I don't either, but I was expecting this to go the other way. I was not expecting this. I was expecting this would be where it would start.
No, yeah, no, they're just waiting for a better anti-abortion case to come up.
Yeah, and
so that they can overturn Roe v. Wade, the dismemberment law from Alabama. It's just a bad case to try and overturn that kind of precedent. They have to have a reasonable argument, or else they're
fair.
You know,
all right,
like the gerrymandering case.
So I'm not allowed to have hope, is what you're saying? No hope for Sam.
Oh no, not until November 2020 are we allowed any kind of hope.
I can't speak to the motivations behind the people who bring these kinds of cases, but I do know why we keep losing.
Yeah.
And it's the whole idea behind the representative democracy thing. We've moved beyond where we need a representative democracy. We have the technology to do
direct
a direct democracy.
And
we have the access to information and ease of communication that would foster good outcomes.
That's a conversation I would like to have on a different day, because I actually...
Sure, absolutely.
Because I could go everywhere with that. Like, I think voting by mail in Washington is bad. I'm against it.
Well, because it's easily... I got lost in the mail.
Yeah, I lose my ballots frequently.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get them.
And then, like, they know who you're going to vote for from your address. I'm like, oh, accidentally didn't vote for anybody.
Yeah.
Not like, to say it happened
I
in
actually
Washington,
think
but.
Voting by internet is more secure than voting by mail. I like the idea of having a non-event election that goes over several days. I like the idea of ballots distributed to the people.
Election holidays.
Election holidays is a great way to do that. Rather than people going to the ballots.
Election barbecues.
I love this model. It's a good model. This implementation sucks. Mm. My problems with vote by mail are entirely implementational. Yeah. The philosophy behind it is absolutely solid, I think. So this is a conversation we could definitely have. I think.
I am down.
Yeah, it's like I said, I totally get it. I just want to know what the there is. Like I need something explained to me in small words, because I don't get it. Yeah, that's that. I am all over the place today. Do I seem all right to you guys? Because I don't.
No, you seem fine. You seem all refreshed a little bit.
All right.
You seem animated. It's kind of warm in here.
I got to do this. I have to do this story. We're over time, but screw it. A Colombian bishop plans to rid his city of the devil by dousing it in holy water dropped from a Navy helicopter. Monsignor Ruben Dario Jaramillo. Okay, this is a great name. Monsignor Ruben Dario Jaramillo Montoya of Benaventura, Colombia, has chosen July 14th, the day of the town's patron saint, to exorcise the demons that he believes are destroying their port. Bonaventura has been known in recent history for its brutal parliamentary gang activity that includes kidnapping, extortion, and murder. Oh, that took a turn. Amarillo Montoya hopes that the holy water will serve as a great public demonstration that will rid the area of violence, drug trafficking, and corruption.
His name is Ruben Dario Jaramillo Montoya. You shall have a city. Prepare for rain.
Say hello to my little
friend. Okay, oh. I know a lot of these stories were like, oh, this is ridiculous. This is terrible. They shouldn't do this. I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
I like this. Just do more of this. On your own dime, but go ahead. Dump holy water on my city.
Yeah, I mean, you're right watering ahead. The plants, essentially. Yeah. I mean, in Colombia, could probably use a little bit more. Oh, wait, no, it's pretty
humid there. Yeah.
It's pretty humid.
On the other hand, so I don't know if it's going to help with kidnapping or drug trafficking or corruption or anything like that.
Depends on what he puts in the holy water.
Right. But I tell you.
Oh, LSD. Microdosing not condoning this.
No. Let's not get all CIA in the house here. Let's not do that. But if we just go with regular holy water without any additives, any religious additives to it, it will help us summon Bahamut. If we need to, like, you
are
know,
are we going Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah, yeah, oh, totally. Okay. Yeah. All so right. Like the meteor comes because yeah. Sephiroth. Yeah. And well, our city is
so
covered
Columbia's
in holy water.
Midgard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my thing. That's my suggestion. That's the only reason I did this story.
I still like LSD myself. Just microdose the entire population. And suddenly nobody's getting kidnapped because nobody knows what the heck's going on.
Yes, let's return to the failed ethics policies of psychology testing in the 20th century. All right, Josh B.F. Skinner over here. That'll be great. A Bloomington, Indiana man has been arrested for lacing cookies served at his church with THC, the active drug found in marijuana. 74-year-old Brian Jones allegedly served cookies after services at St. John's the Apostle Catholic Church last May. Several congregants who had unknowingly ingested Jones' cookies and ended up in local hospitals experienced symptoms consistent with cannabinoid consumption. One was as young as 12 years old. Oh, that's less good. Three reported that the cookies tasted saltier than normal. Investigators found hash oil in the man's home. St. John's pastor Daniel Mahan stated that they are praying for everyone involved.
So I think Montoya needs to reach out to this guy.
Yeah. So this is a superhero pairing.
There you go.
This would be better than Endgame.
So pot-laced cookies, pot-laced holy water.
Hey, this is the one place where thoughts and prayers could work.
Yeah.
Because it's cannabinoid consumption. You know what the antidote to cannabinoid consumption is? Waiting.
Yeah.
Just wait.
The only problem is like it was as young as 12 years old was dosed, and that's massively bad.
That's bad.
And
yeah.
Also dosing people against their will is absolutely bad, and I am against it even as much as I was joking about.
Yeah, we're joking about it. Half the things we've said in this episode were not serious.
He's been arrested for it. He hasn't been like convicted of intentionally dosing people. So it's possible that it was an eye. He's 74.
He made two batches of cookies, one for him, one for his friends.
Yeah, no, right.
And somebody came in his house and swapped the labels.
Yeah.
Well,
or the butter, the THC.
Or the butter. You grabbed the wrong butter.
Wrong butter.
Yeah, that's true.
Possible.
But what state is it? Indiana? Pot's not legal in Indiana yet.
No, pot is not legal in Indiana.
Yeah, this guy's going to have a bad time.
Illinois that just legalized it.
They just legalized
it. Nice.
I am mad about that.
Why?
Because it's one less reason my family will come out here.
Oh, okay.
Because that was for years. I was like, come on out. Come to Washington. There's like a lot of bars. The live music scene is great. There's a science fiction museum. You guys would love it. Also, pot is legal. Come on out. Yeah. Come out and check out the space noodle. Space noodle? Come out and check out the space noodle. Also, the pot. Come on.
That needs to be a thing, a space noodle.
Space noodle. Like, this
spaghetti monster.
I have lived away from Chicago for 21 years, and my dad has yet to visit. And it's like, it's getting on me. And so I was like, yeah, come on out. I don't know how he feels about pot. I literally have no idea. But I was just kind of
throwing it out there.
I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah. Dad, you're a musician. The music scene here is amazing. You'd love it. There's a bunch of great bars. We'd have a great time. You'd get to hang out with a bunch of my friends. Also, we could go to the pot store. Like, that's what I've been doing since we passed it in 2012. And then Illinois has to be all forward thinking and, you know, liberal and legalize pot. And
somebody needs to put a stop to these people.
Yeah.
Turn them around. Where
are the people who could help me prevent this?
Yeah.
Come on. Make
it exclusively in areas that we want people to go to and right. not in everybody. Right?
Jeff Sessions, this was your deal.
Well, Jeff Sessions is gone.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you suck.
So William Barr now doesn't even care, probably. So.
No. William Barr's got one job, and that's to keep the president out of jail. Because that's...
And he's effective at it.
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't have to try very hard, given that he's still the president. But the very minute that changes, I don't know. I would like to start a betting pool about whether or not Trump actually spends any time in jail.
I'm on the side that he's not.
Yeah, I am too, but it's if we're going to do it, it's going to be now. All right, we're going to wrap up, but I got one more email. Hi, this is Colin from Seattle. Hi, longtime listener and supporter here. I want to thank Sam for the latest episode talking about depression and mental health. I want to share with you a bit of my own story, as well as give you as much support as I can offer. You are loved and you are worthwhile. Also, and I know you already know this, but it still bears stating, you are the only one who gets to declare what is helpful or healthy for you. As for myself, I am a teacher. I also have a host of problems, including depression, anxiety, chronic migraines, and kidney stones. Okay, so it's kind of a Venn diagram of me and Mickey.
Yeah.
Everyone's depression looks different. Mine includes insomnia, anxiety, and enough brain fog to make London look positively balmy. There have been months where I would go in and pretend I wasn't in mind-numbing pain, try to manage the anxiety attacks before or after class, then go home and cry myself to sleep. To everyone else, I looked like I functioned. It was more than 6 months of therapy and medication before things started to get better. You were there for me through that. You were there for me inserting your brand of humor and insight through multiple kidney surgeries. I'll spare you the painful details. You helped me find a secular official when I got married. Your voice of reason has helped so much in my life. We'll be here when you are feeling better, and we're here for you now. Your voice of support has meant so much, so I'll offer it back in return. Depression lies, it gets better, and you have our love support. You have our love and support. Thanks so much, Colin. Wow. These are the two, emails have kind of dried up in the last few months. And these were, and then after that last episode I did, we got the first one I opened with from Lewis while I was up on the cabin, and I got this one just now. And Colin, we present very similarly, and that's part of my problem is I can look functional, I sound functional, I have diction, things like that, and so a lot of the times, me unhealthy looks remarkably like me healthy to people who don't know what to look for. And it sounds like it kind of works the same way for you. And that's a hard thing for people to really grok. It's been difficult for Becky because she's like, well, you're talking. You're making logical arguments. You're doing all these. You seem fine. Under the hood, I'm running on two cylinders. It's like, no, I'm not fine. It's not like we're fighting, but it's my point is that it's hard to detect sometimes. And I don't know. I kind of want to go through all the episodes of Ask an Atheist. I want to chart where I was mentally through the show and do some sort of vocal analysis to figure out if there's some sort of tell. Because I now have 9 years of me talking into a microphone on record. And I've had some really good moments. Like there was, when I got engaged to Becky on the air, there was winning the SCAN Awards. There was going on tour. Those were all real high points for me. And there's low points in between. And I always kind of wonder what the difference is. I'm not doing too great right now, but I'm having a great time behind the microphone. I thought this was going to stink. I thought I was going to hate it. I thought it was going to be a slog, but I've got friends here who I really like talking to. We can riff off each other. It's amazing. And I haven't had this much fun in a long time.
And, apparently this kind of thing helps other people too. So.
That's been my fight lately is I feel like
that's one of the things that helps keep me going.
Yeah. It began to feel like me talking about my mental health wasn't helping me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real private guy. I know it doesn't seem like it because I talk into a microphone for a living.
Right.
For money anyway. The person I play mostly on the air is a character. I think I've said this before.
That's pretty true for a lot of on-air personalities.
It is. It's really true for a lot of on-air personalities. And I take after the kind of folks who would do that. Like, I like in interviews, I'm stupider than I am. I ask a lot of dumb questions.
You play the straight man.
I play the straight. I'm really good at that. And by straight, I mean like the comedy concept.
Yes, right. Yeah. Not the cis.
Yeah, not that one. That's a conversation for another day. Yeah. And so in 2013, right before tour, like it was a low time for me. And Becky and I was talking about it, and my friends, thought it would be a good idea if I were a little bit more public than I was about it. Cause I'm not, I wouldn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it in Arizona. I didn't talk about it to anyone. And, I think the only person who knew how bad it got for me was the people I lived with.
Mm.
And at that point in my 20s, I was absolutely eschewing any sort of treatment, because I had seen people go on treatments and it worked terribly, to say the least. So I was very much against any sort of medical, you know, any sort of pharmaceutical concept or anything like that. And I've gotten a lot of, I would get therapy, and therapy was always kind of never really worked very well for me. I'll put it that way. And so I just kept it all to myself. And then when I moved up here, or, after my first, after my first marriage fell apart, I was like, I took stock of who I was and what I was and what I wanted to be. And I'm like, I should be more public about that. And then in 2013, we, conversation with my friends. Yeah, you should tell people, because it kind of shows sometimes. Like, all right. And so I wrote that article, which a lot of people liked, but then I don't hear anything. And so it burns a lot of myself. I have to expend a lot of energy to do what I'm doing right now.
Mm.
This is not comfortable. But I was able to do it, because I could tell myself, well, if I'm helping other people and other people are helped by it, that will make me feel better. And that might work. And so I tried it, and I got a couple attaboys, and that was about it. And I'm like, and so I was actually thinking about doing a Patreon episode where I said, okay, this being public about my depression is terrible. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done. and I intimated that. I think I intimated that. My memory is not fantastic right now, on the last episode. And I'm getting these emails. I'm like, oh, I am helping.
Yeah. There's when I think back on the things that have been like big moments for me in my life, when I've had someone else had to have a big effect on me.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen immediately right there in that moment when they're saying the thing. It's not the light bulb goes on and I'm able to say, oh wow, that really helped me. It always comes after having thought about it for a little bit.
Yeah. Right?
So I kind of feel like the thing that we're talking about is something that, I think there's a lot more people
okay.
like this out there that are having this kind of experience. And it was just these couple of folks who then themselves had the bandwidth to reach out and let you know.
One of the really helpful piece of advice is when it comes to radio, came to me from Bruce, who was the programming manager at KLAY. He said, for every email, for every phone call, assume there's at least 10 other people who had the same idea, but didn't have the wherewithal to make contact.
Exactly what I mean.
Yeah. And that's cool. But 0 times 10 is 0.
And the flip side of that, the hate mail can also be multiplied by 10.
The hate mail, I haven't gotten a death threat in 2 years. What am I doing wrong?
Well, I think that's an important thing for everybody, though. I don't think you made a mistake by being public with your mental health.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that other people are making a mistake by not telling other people, by not being public with theirs, because like this person says, though that person is in charge of deciding what is good for them and what's not.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth considering that it might help.
Yeah, these two emails I got, they're both local, which is amazing. And they both get it, which is also amazing.
Yeah.
Like, these are the best emails I've gotten in recent memory. It has never been so personal. And it was beginning to feel, like, maybe Ask an Atheist had sort of lost its focus. Maybe it's definitely lost its focus, because I've lost my focus. But it's kind of lost its point. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. Very little of it has to do with atheism. Nobody's really paying attention to it. And I'm like, maybe we've done our job.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've been missing episodes lately, and that's been weighing on me. Because one of the things I I pride myself on, and I'm going to end on this, is I pride myself on getting an episode out every week. Right. I mean, we've missed less than 10 episodes over 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking 400 some episodes, you know, and one of the things I really like, it's the advice I give to everybody who starts a podcast. It's three things. I've forgotten them, but one of them is, commit to 6 months, clock regular, pick a schedule and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, those are the two major things, is pick a schedule, go with it. Commit to the discipline of getting an episode out every week or every 2 weeks or every month or however you decide you want to release, and commit to at least 6 months of doing it before you decide whether or not you like it.
Uh-huh.
If you're gonna do all the work it takes to start a podcast, because starting a podcast is not a simple thing. And I see a lot of people, they spend thousands of dollars getting all the cool equipment, they get it all going, they build a studio in their house, and they produce three podcasts, and that's it. And so what I tell people is, if you're going to do a podcast, commit to doing it for at least 6 months, and at the end of 6 months, go, oh, this sucks, I'm not doing it. Or
also, don't start like with the new gear. Start small. Start with first build up. Like, first make sure that you got your voice out there.
Yeah.
Develop your voice, and then build upon that, so you actually show progression and actually reinforces your love of the actual technical side of it.
I've produced Ask an Atheist out of garbage for most of its history. We started out on cable access, which cost us nothing, and then we went to radio, which cost us quite a lot, but we had to lease a transmitter. And then when we moved to our own studio, our studio was built on we're still using the IKEA lamps. We're, we're coffee bags and insulation for,
is that
like,
what these are?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is rock wool and insulation. Like, I built this studio as cheaply as I could, and it was built out of basically used garbage that I would slowly replace all the parts with. Like, the cheap stage mics went away, and the most expensive things in this room are the things we're talking into, are these microphones, because nothing replaces a good microphone. I started out with a cheap sound card. Now I've got a really nice 16 input interface. And so I built out of garbage, and as time went on, I just replaced it with nicer and nicer stuff. So maybe over the aggregate, I've spent more money than somebody who just buys really nice equipment out of the gate, but it's been a really low level investment the whole time, and I'm able to make podcasts that sound like this. I don't know why I went on that tangent. I don't know. I might have to edit that out.
that whole path.
Yeah.
All of the decisions that you've made in the 11 years?
Mm, 11, 9.
9 years.
Yeah.
Past 9 years.
Yeah.
That led to this point. Helped count.
Yeah.
Like, there's an email address that has a name associated with that. Yeah. The whole person and a whole life. And then, you know. Take that for what it's worth.
And so this isn't. And so the reason I'm bringing this up now that I remember is we've skipped a couple episodes this year without announcing it. That's been purely logistics and other stuff. I don't like pod fading. I hate the phrase. It's a crap phrase.
Is that like ghosting?
It's basically ghosting your podcast.
Pod ghosting?
Yeah, pod ghosting. I don't like that. I'm not going to do it. If we start pod fading, I'm just going to end the show. Because if you're pod fading, that means your heart is not there.
Right.
And at that point, it's time to be serious. But I still love doing this. I don't care if anybody's like, I could do it. Like, maybe, you know, I'd maybe change the schedule a little bit. I mean, Becky's been a huge help. I think she's a better host than I am at this point, because she stays on topic. I don't. And so, yeah, this is sort of a, hey, I know we skipped a couple episodes. This is not the new normal. This is a blip.
Yeah.
That's,
think of all this extra content you're giving out, though.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we wouldn't have had this if we stayed on topic.
90-minute episode, yeah. I might have to split this in two for radio. Or maybe just, you know, maybe do a radio edit and shoot it at Radio Tacoma. Anyway, that's all the time we got for today. This was a lot of fun. You can tell because I went long. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Justin.
Very welcome.
Our website is atheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. Our email address is questions@atheist.radio. Our Twitter is askanatheistwa. I'm on 40 meters a lot. I mean, you can find me there. That's where the band is. Band's good right now. Probably be on it towards the end of the week with some campers if you're one of the three people who are there. That's about it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for the feedback. See you guys next week.